Welcome to the Cannabis Equipment News Podcast. Hi, I'm David Manti, and welcome to a new episode of the Cannabis Equipment News Podcast. With me this week is Dan Grimm, CEO and janitor of Good Stuff Manufacturing. How are you doing today, Dan?
I'm doing great, David. How are you doing?
I am doing great. I'm really looking forward to it. But before we get started, please make sure to like, share, and subscribe to the podcast. You can also help us out a lot by leaving the podcast a positive review on whatever platform you use. If you want to email the podcast, you can reach me at david@cannabisequipmentnews.com with email the podcast in the subject line. You can also subscribe to our daily newsletter and make sure you get it delivered to your inbox first. Dan, I always like to learn a little bit about your personal journey to the cannabis industry. So, where did and when did it start?
You know, I came from the telecom network space, and I've always had a strong idea, or I was very in tune with what is the manifestation of my actions. And when I was in the corporate space, I kind of felt like I was just really helping big companies decrease their operating costs, increase their profits, and you know, that doesn't sound like a great legacy. So I really got interested in the idea of cannabis and the ability to potentially make products that really help everyday people. And so I went to BizCon in 2015 without any experience in the industry. Mm-hmm. And I just jumped in. You know, I did the crash course. I talked to every vendor on the expo floor. I networked like crazy. And I came out and I had three major takeaways for BizCon. And it was A, this thing's going to go legal in California. That's a pretty good business opportunity. B, the feeling of activism in the industry. It's a little bit less now, but it was really, really cool. And it got it certainly gave me the goosebumps. And three, nobody cared about cannabis beverages. It was barely a twinkle in an eye. And so my father came with me on that trip. He drove back from Vegas, and I'm literally writing the business plan, riding shotgun on the way back from MJ BizCon. So, and then I was full on from that point forward. So went to BizCon and jumped in.
So after jumping in, do people care about cannabis beverages now?
More and more. You know, sometimes it's more the investors than the consumers, you know, but we've seen big spikes. Now, big spikes is going from, you know, 0.5% of dispensary spend to maybe 1.1% of dispensary spend. But cannabis beverage is the fastest growing segment, you know, over the last 12 to 24 months. So it's happening. It's just it's still nascent. But we're also seeing a lot of growth on the East Coast, a lot of the big success stories, whether that was Levia jumping out in Massachusetts, some really strong sales numbers out of like New Hampshire, Missouri is doing really well. So, you know, the classic Western states, you know, California, Oregon, Washington, they've been decent markets, but we're seeing really good growth on the East Coast. So people are more and more caring about cannabis beverage. We just need to get it to that 5% mark, then everybody can eat.
Why do you think people are caring more? What is it about the cannabis beverage experience that maybe other products don't offer?
Well, I mean, I think from the beginning, what made sense to me is drinking is a part of our culture. It's part of our culture. It's part of our society. It's how we imbibe. It just makes sense. People don't get a brownie and ruminate, you know, over the flavor of a brownie, right? I mean, this is how we do it, you know, whether it's beer or wine, cocktail. So, I mean, you know, drinking is a part of our culture. But what we really needed and what we didn't have for a long time was the technology, you know, in the nanoemulsification to create truly great homogenized products, because especially back in the day in the medical world, it's a little bit better. It's a lot better now. You know, product consistency is really important. If you get a different high at the beginning of the bottle versus the end of the bottle, you're not buying that product anymore, right? Because you have a certain expectation. Product consistency is really important. So, we needed the technology to step up. And companies like Virtosa, source. You know, these the big companies that really dove in and created great nano emulsifications to create homogeneity. That was really important. So now that that's happened, low dose is starting to take off. Production costs have come down. So, you know, it's been those it was those have been really the main drivers, is is homogeneity and the advent of the beverage co-packer to drive costs down. And the retailers, you really need the retailers to support. You know, I was talking with the Urban Leaf Group, and I remember I pitched them in 2017 on, let's bring in a fridge, a big, nice retail fridge. And they said, I don't want any part of that. And then a couple years later, they bought fridges for all their shops. And I'm talking to the guy that was running it. I was like, well, what happened? He's like, beverage is getting interesting. You know, and I have to compliment, Can was a big part of that. You know, they really raised the profile of cannabis beverage. You know, so Can, what was going on in Canada. So there's a lot bubbling, you know, in beverage that has really helped support, you know, this movement. But you know, there's still a long way to go.
Getting into beverages so early, like in 2015, were you part of the sort of front line pushing for that innovation, pushing for that demand in terms of manufacturing capabilities to get your product off the ground?
I mean, we're talking to people about it, at the CCIA level, and it fortunately enough people started to see the future. You know, as I saw it in 2015, there were other, people like Harold Hahn, of Virtosa, bringing the technology in and coupling with Ben Larson, the CEO. Abe, who is my partner on the manufacturing side now, being the first co-packer of cannabis beverages, realizing that there was a need. You know, at the end of the day, businesses are driven by needs that are unmet. So as beverage started to pick up some stature, as sales started to increase, services to support the industry started to come around. You know, so we started by building a cannabis infused kombucha product.
Okay.
There was about four other companies that tried that. We outsold them all, and I don't mean to brag, that's just us being a we were a big fish in an infinitesimally small pond, David. But you know, once we started to grow out of that, and at that point we were having a company make we were buying the product and infusing it, was really early stage. You know, by the time we got out of that, the services come 2017, 18, we're starting to support the industry.
Okay. Well, and you're right about imbibing being part of our culture. You know, I can't say that I've ever been invited to a brownie tasting party, but, you know, I'd RSVP.
Me some milk.
So your beverages, I mean, the evolution, they obviously, I was looking into some of it, and it seems like you regularly receive very high marks, particularly last year for your lemonade mixers. I think it was voted, you know, top beverage from some publications, at least in the top 10 in several. To what do you attribute that success?
Well, a lot of hard work, and it starts at the formulation level, right? So a lot of companies will outsource their formulations, and you can create some great formulations that way. We build products like you're on a farm. We get real honey, we get real lemon juice, we get real fruit, and then we keep tinkering with recipes and get people to try them in mass. So I also have a small CBD company, and the CBD company sells at farmers markets. So while the sales rep is manning the CBD company, the CBD stand, I go out there with a tray and five samples of our new strawberry hibiscus and ask the public which one is the best and why. And if you use real ingredients and you ask enough people which ones are the best and why, then you start to really fine-tune a really great formula. So that's really the secret to the success.
Is there any inherent risk in using real ingredients, whether or not it's supply chain delays or spoilage, anything like that?
Yeah, Yeah, I lost a year's worth of profit from using real ingredients.
Oh, man.
So,
What happened?
well, long story short, real ingredients are great, as you can imagine, as a at a lower level, but as you start to scale, but specifically when we moved to the regulatory environment in 18, we found out that the THC was not playing nice with some of those natural ingredients. It was hiding it. So, you start dealing with challenges of binding and co-eluting, and all of a sudden you're like, we put 100 milligrams in there, but the lab can't find it. So that's a good way. Failing, we failed three tests, and we're just coming in at 88 of 100 mil. You had to hit 90 for 100 milligram product, but then you're selling it for less and it's moving slower. So yeah, we had to, in order to keep our real ingredient foundation and pass the tests, we had to do some real formulation tinkering then. But we got it, and we were able to still use real honey, we're able to still use real lemon juice, and we're still able to use real fruit. But we had to spend a year reformulating to make sure that it also worked within the greater THC science and testing world.
I mean, that sounds like an incredibly long year. How did you persevere? As you can, I mean, you're looking at the account sheet, you know how things are going for the year.
Yeah, it was challenging. I certainly say that we had lots of opportunities to quit, David. We had lots of opportunities to quit.
Okay.
But my partner and I have been driven from the beginning of creating high quality, premium, finely crafted, richly flavored beverages. With our Honey Lemonade series, our customers are fanatics. They are ecstatic about the product. It took a little longer to get where that could also produce enough revenue and profit to sustain, but we got there. And now we're looking to expand. We're moving into some other territories.
Right. I mean, speaking of moving into other territories, well, first of all, were you manufacturing it in-house or were you relying on co-packers?
We were relying on a group called Weird Science Labs. Weird Science Labs out of Berkeley was the first co-packer in the state of California, which I believe means the first co-packer in the country to co-pack cannabis beverages. So a brilliant guy by the name of Abe Yoakum. So I was introduced to Abe. He started to manufacture our product. Working with a co-packer is a very intimate experience, giving up control of the manufacturing process, making sure, feeling confident that your SOPs are being followed correctly. But they did a great job and made it easy and allowed me to focus on all the other aspects of the business that you need to do as a CEO and janitor.
So, what about that? Are you CEO and why CEO and janitor?
Well, I mean, I don't live in an ivory tower. I mean, we got to get out. I mean, you got to fill all the holes. So sometimes that means having high level meetings with other owners and other ownership groups or MSOs, and sometimes that's mopping the floors. So you got to do everything in between to be successful, David.
No, that's true. I mean, the successful entrepreneurs are the ones that hustle, right?
Yeah, I learned at an early age that, you got to lead from the front. If you're always barking instruction and you're not doing, occasionally I will set down big goals to the team. And whenever, there's significant goals and I ask people to step up their game, I always make sure that there's a significant part where I'm stepping up my game. So like last year we set a pretty significant sales goal. And I asked people to step up, and I asked people to take on different roles. And in order to facilitate that energy, I got out of my office, I got into my car, and I drove up and down California, hitting all of our clients and all of our potential prospects over the course of a month. And we our sales goal was double our current volume, and we doubled that.
Oh, very good.
So leadership starts from the top, and not just barking orders, but getting out and doing. So I'm a big fan of that.
So about 3 weeks ago, and I might have the timing wrong, so if I do, I apologize. You launched Good Stuff Manufacturing. Why did you launch Good Stuff Manufacturing? And is your Abe, that's the partner, the same Abe from Weird Science?
Certainly is. Certainly is. Yeah. So, we started to get interest. People started to see that we were, named Beverage of the Year and top 10 and, in a bunch of media. And so some of that started to filter into people on the East Coast, and they started to get interested in our company and interested in our beverage. They wanted to produce a Good Stuff beverage on the East Coast. So that sounded pretty fun and an interesting business opportunity. So we got out there and started talking to them, and we clearly needed to find a way to produce the product. So I had called Abe and I got him involved, said, Abe, you got to build a manufacturing solution on the East Coast. We could build good stuff there. And like any good deal, David, this deal was hot and then it was dead. And then it was hot again, and we closed it, right? I mean, that's how all these things work, it seems. So when we built this manufacturing solution, and when the deal was dead, Abe came to me and said, "You know what, Dan? I've been thinking about this for a long time." He's like, "There's some real challenges in this industry, and specifically cannabis beverage, and the current solutions don't fit." So if you want good stuff to be in 5, 7, 10 different markets, what are we going to do? We're going to build manufacturing in 5, 7, 10 different markets. That doesn't make any sense. It's like, and we could try to find a co-packer in all these markets, but A, there's not a lot of beverage co-packers. B, a lot of them, some of them aren't very good. And see, even if you did, let's say we move good stuff into 10 markets, now you have 10 different co-packers. Now you have other problems. If you want to be a great brand, the number one rule of being a great brand is delivering the same experience, whether that's in New York, Chicago, or LA. How are you going to do that if you have 10 different co-packers? You could say you have your formulations and your SOPs, but the reality is your compound variables. If you have different people, different teams with different equipment, all those compound variables are going to lead to product inconsistency. And you're going to have to hire someone just to manage your operational nightmare, which is 10 co-packers. So he said, he came to me, he said, I've got a different viewpoint on beverage production because I did it just for the state of California. I don't come from big alcohol like some of the other groups come from. And I know how to do it at the right scale. And I could do it at a scale that we could do it mobily. And if we created a mobile manufacturing solution, we could solve these challenges. We could have one throat to choke, which makes the operation much easier to manage from a brand standpoint. And we could create product consistency because, again, you've got one team, one piece of equipment, one line. So that was a really hot idea. And I got very excited about the ability to use it as a competitive advantage to spread Good Stuff Beverage Company across the country. And it will, it is helping Good Stuff Beverage Company move across the country. But I'm a big believer in the segment. When people go in and buy 20 bottles or 30 bottles, they'll go into a shop and then the budtender's like, "Hey, Dan, hey man, somebody came in and bought 40 bottles of the good stuff." It's always the same reasons, David. It's alcoholism. I can replace the booze with the good stuff. My wife, she was on sleeping pills. She found that the good stuff helps her sleep. My brother-in-law is on hard stuff like heroin. He's trying to get off heroin. It's always replacing something that's got massively negative side effects. And I can't pretend that's just my product. That's cannabis beverage in mass. And I believe that cannabis beverages can have a real positive impact on our society, on our culture. I'm a believer. I'm getting goosebumps just talking about it. So So when I started talking to Vertosa about what I was doing, and Vertosa is a significant emulsion provider, they started asking if we were willing to do this for other companies. And at first I was like, heck no, this is our competitive advantage. But then I started getting excited about what I mentioned in the beginning. How can I have an impact on the world? What is my legacy? It was like, well, if I can help this segment move forward and help more people get access to high quality cannabis beverages to replace their booze, to replace their sleeping pills, and to replace other substances that aren't doing them any good, that got me excited. So we moved from just a bottling line to a bottling line and a canning line, and now we're really helping. We're focused on helping beverages be able to expand faster and more efficiently across the country.
What sort of logistical challenges are presented by having a mobile manufacturing solution? I mean, a lot of it, you talk about having your SOPs. How do you keep all those in place, when things might, I guess, get tossed around a little bit in transit?
Well, there's two ways that we could produce. First and foremost, we could produce in the trailer, or we could bring the equipment, into the facility, right? You
Okay.
know, and whether we're doing one or the other, we have a pretty intensive food safety plan that we follow, and that's really the core of our SOPs, whether that's in sanitation or other. So, whether we're again in the trailer, we're pulling the equipment into the facility, we've got our food safety plan, and that's really our guiding light. And that gives us a lot of ability to, and really, it really depends on the state. Each state has its own regulations that will dictate, kind of how we need to manage production. In a state like Massachusetts, for example, you can back the truck up, be part of a bay, bring the cameras into the trailer, and now you are an extension of the regulated facility. In a state like Arizona, we have to bring the equipment onto the manufacturing floor in a commercial kitchen space. So, really, the state dictates.
Do you have to have licenses in each state that you operate, or do you work with the operator? Do you use their license?
Great question. No, we work with their license. The model works because we're able to, we're driving the equipment across state lines, right? We're not bringing any cannabis with us. We're working with a local operator. We're using their license, and that
Okay.
allows us to move quickly and efficiently to, excuse me, to get access. So as of today, we have relationships, with providers in Arizona, Washington, Missouri, Ohio, New York, Colorado, and probably soon to be Nevada. So, if you look at expanding, if you're a beverage company and you want to expand, there's five pieces to the stool, five legs. You need the manufacturing, you need the licensed facility, you need the distribution, you need the sales, and you need the emulsion. So, and for most beverage companies, you look at a state and you're hodgepodging all of those together. Our goal is to take a few select beverage companies with us, just like Good Stuff is going to move across the country, help them effectively move across the country. We bring the manufacturing. We have the relationship with the licensed facility. Sometimes that comes with the distribution. We are agnostic to the emulsion provider that they want to use. We certainly have our own partnerships. I mentioned one in this call, and then the sales. So in some situations, we could provide all of everything but the sales piece to make it easy for a brand to say, okay, I want to move it to this state. Well, here's again the facility, the manufacturing, the distribution, the emulsion. And if you can do the sales part, we can do the rest.
How big is the trailer, and how many do you currently have in operation?
Great question. So it's essentially 30 by 8. Right now, we've got a bottling operation in a trailer, and a canning operation in a trailer, and we're set up to essentially move those in a quarterly fashion across the country. You know,
Okay.
once we reach a critical mass, we'll start building an East Coast operation versus a West Coast operation, and certainly, like a state like New York, we think that sooner rather than later, we'll be building an operation on ground. You know, in cannabis beverage, volume is still modest, so you know it's a let's see the white of their eyes in terms of the level of production needed before we start building in.
That makes sense. And I mean, it seems relatively scalable as well, to ramp up with demand.
Highly, because again, we can go east west, we can go northeast, southeast, northwest, southwest, build four, okay? And or okay, this location, whether it's New York or Nevada, has so much production, then we're just going to build into, you know, it's if you're in alcohol, a lot of people from cannabis beverage come from alcohol, and they come in, they say, oh, well, seven states, we're just going to build seven manufacturing facilities. But, you know, to be frank, to this point, a lot of the grander investments in cannabis beverage, you can include Canada into this, a lot of their investors aren't really thrilled with the returns that they've gotten. This is a practical approach to cannabis beverage that is far more cost effective and says, prove to me that there's the demand, and then we will build it.
So, I mean, I guess the natural progression wouldn't just be necessarily more trailers, but like brick and mortar co-packing operations in those states once you get established. Or is it to keep it mobile?
You know, we're going to let the demand play out. You know, if the demand is higher, but it's split relatively evenly between markets, then mobile might persist. If all of a sudden, you know, it's like, hey, we're running the East Coast, and you know, maybe Jersey is really light, but New York is crushing it, and maybe we don't have as much business in Massachusetts, even though I know that's a big market. You know, so I think that we need to see, you know, over time how the demand really plays out. But their model is flexible enough that we could scale it by building additional operational units that are mobile, or we could pull up stakes and build into certain facilities.
So I've heard about a lot of challenges with co-packers, particularly not being able to meet product spec. So what do you do to kind of make sure you set yourself apart to be that kind of upper echelon co-packer that can meet the demands of your prospective clients?
Well, we're unique in a lot of ways. Number one, I mean, we've talked about the mobile side, and that really lends to custom solutions. So, you know, we're talking to groups that are outside of just straight cannabis. Sometimes they want their distribution hubs to be in a certain place. Because we're mobile, we could go where they want to go. Right. So the mobile part adds a lot of flexibility both in cannabis and outside of cannabis to say we could produce where you want. Okay, you've got distribution all over the country. Okay, well, we could be your coast to coast. We could produce in New York, we could produce in Texas, and we could produce in California, and we could reduce your transportation costs because of it. Right. So the mobility adds to our ability to create custom solutions to support the operations of our clients. In addition to that, some of the challenge I think that happens from a communication standpoint between a brand and a co-packer is language and not understanding the needs. And as someone who's owned a brand since 2015, that is also the leader of the manufacturing company. You know, we're a beverage manufacturing company run by a beverage brand, and I think that that matters when you start getting into the challenges and how to manage them, and understanding the needs of the brand as intimately as I do. So I like to say that we're a beverage brand that runs a beverage manufacturer, and you could feel that, and the mobile and our flexibility allows us to create really custom solutions.
Well, it's understandable to me because you speak their language as a beverage manufacturer, but is there any apprehension in terms of there being like a competitive element since, you know, you're potentially fighting for shelf space?
You know, most of the co-packers I've worked with had a brand, and I was always very, yeah, I mean, that you have to walk a fine line. I mean, to be frank, you know, I'm really interested in working, finding, and we're building that group kind of beverages now that we work with that are complementary, you know, and not just complementary to Good Stuff Beverage, you're really complementary to each other. In other words, you know, it's a world of seltzers right now, right? You know, yep. And we need everybody to thrive. You know, could we sign three seltzers and put them all in Arizona? Yeah, that doesn't really, but Arizona's not a massive market. That doesn't make a lot of sense. You know, New York, all bets are off. You know, everybody's going to go into New York. I think New York is more like whoever wants to manufacture and let the best company win. But I think for these smaller markets, I'm more interested in building something complementary. You know, for example, like Colorado is only 0.5% of dispensary spend. And why is that? Do people not like drinks there? No, it's because there's been very limited manufacturing infrastructure, which has limited the number of beverages on the market, right? But now we're bringing our infrastructure. We have a tremendous partner in Colorado, Tenacious Labs. Hi, Zach. They've got a great setup. We're going to start producing beverages in Colorado, and in a perfect world, you know, we would get a few complimentary, and we'd get a big retail fridge, and we find a cost-effective way to give that fridge to the retailer with three or four or five different companies all complementing, whether that's low dose, high dose, sodas, lemonades, you know. So, you know, I think that the vision is, how do we do this smartly so everybody's well positioned to succeed?
Well, and it makes sense because with some of the previous beverage brands that I've spoken with, they've stayed out of markets just because those capabilities aren't there. So I think it's really smart to have both your expertise and capabilities going into these markets, or the ability to go into the market, I guess, mobily.
That's right. That's right. Yes. It's the manufacturing infrastructure has certainly been a limiting factor.
So what is what has the last month been like ever since you've launched, and how has interest been?
Well, interest is high. You know, there's everybody understands the challenges that I talked about. How do we expand efficiently? How do we keep product consistent, right? How do we manage all the operational nightmares of multiple states? You know, there are different groups. You know, there are groups that are in one territory and they're talking to their investors about how to expand, right? And then there are the bigger groups, you know, the Cans and the Keeps of the world. They have different challenges, you know, because they're in multiple markets already. So you know, everybody's got their own demands, but you know, people see the vision, right? People see the vision and understand it. It takes time because you're not talking about, sometimes you're talking about just replacing their current manufacturing. But when you're talking about breaking into a new market, even though we might be bringing a lot of that stool, still setting up, you know, having the financial, the capital, the emotional space to launch a new territory, all that takes time. So we're launching in Arizona first. With a couple brands, and we're Colorado is being prepped. Colorado is, like I said, a very exciting opportunity. We've got a space through a partnership in New York and Long Island important that it's Long Island because almost all of the manufacturing licenses are upstate, which is fine if you're doing pre-rolls, and is a bummer if you've got pallets and pallets of heavy beverages that you need to move from Buffalo, right? So, we're getting this is all getting in motion now. So it's an exciting time, David. It's an exciting time.
Well, and with that excitement in the growing industry, some of the bigger players have kind of jumped in, like a Mary Jones, which is a portion of Jones Soda. Is there more opportunity with the introduction of, quote, big soda coming into the industry, or is that seen as a threat to some of the more craft manufacturers?
I mean, we've had PBR, we've had Lagunitas, we've had other big names that have come from outside of cannabis. I think it's good. At the end of the day, you got to create a great product. If you don't create a great product, but those names have lent additional validity and spotlight to our segment. I heard Bob on your podcast, and I haven't spoken to Bob, but that struck me that he wants to be in Colorado, and had some conversations through an intermediary about that. So yeah, I mean, I think what they're doing is great. At the end of the day, anything that brings spotlight to our category is important. I think this is an environment where a rising tide must lift all boats of all ships. If we don't, to be frank, we need to get to 2, 3, 4, 5% of dispensary spend in order for everybody to feel like this is going to have the happy ending that I envisioned in 2015. Right now at around 1.1%. But people see the future. Boris, I think his name is Boris Jordan, CEO of Curaleaf, was talking about it. He's like, I believe that cannabis will be 50% cannabis beverage once the federal glass ceiling is busted. But he also spoke about the fact that he couldn't put infrastructure and do sales in states that weren't highly dense like New York because of the cost. And again, this is part of the problem that good stuff manufacturing solves.
So what did you hear from that intermediary?
Yeah, Bob has some he's got some big requirements, and we're looking at how we can meet them. We're looking at how we can meet them. So you never know, crazier things have happened. I would love to bring Jones Soda to Colorado.
Well, that sounds like that would be a great opportunity, and I'm sure that people in Colorado would be thankful as well. The last time, I was kind of looking through some of your posts, particularly on LinkedIn, as you were kind of rolling stuff out. And the last I had checked, you didn't have a partner in Colorado. So how did the partnership with Tenacious Labs come together?
One of our partners made an introduction. Virtosa had a long-standing relationship with Tenacious, so they made an introduction. They were doing a lot of manufacturing on the CBD side. They've got two separate sides of their business, the CBD side, and then a separate side that is a MIP, the THC manufacturing side. So we actually just flew out there last week to cement the relationship. I think they got a great space. They've got good room to hold finished product. They can help with distribution. I mean, it's a really great setup. So, a lot of manufacturers will say, "Hey, Dan, yeah, we can work with you." And it's like, "Well, do you have a forklift? Do you have a pallet jack?" Well, no, you don't want to work with me, man. We're gonna be a, if you're not set up for beverage, then you're not set up for beverage. These guys are set up for beverage, and that market is just ripe. I mean, 0.5% of dispensary spend in Colorado means that they're half the national average, less than half. It's only because they don't have the right products in the market. So we went out there, cemented the relationship, and are excited to get started.
When it comes to personal consumption, do you prefer beverages?
Yeah, So I like to say that alcohol, when I was 21, your listeners can't see this, but it was like, the fun side of alcohol was really high and the pain was really low. And every year I get older, the fun starts to dip and the pain goes up until you reach this balancing point. You're like, why am I doing this anymore? Right? And that was really the premise behind wanting to get into beverages. We were getting older, my partner and I. We were looking for a way to replace alcohol. And I still drink, but I've replaced 80% of my alcohol consumption with my own product. We've got these little, this little shot guys I put in my pocket. If I'm going to go to a bar, I order a water, I pour a little bit in there, or I'll just drink it straight. And it's great, man. I mean, you feel so much better, the next day. And as opposed to a gummy or a brownie, beverages hit way faster. This is part of the advantage of cannabis beverage, and part of what will make it win long term is, you get the liquid, the solution. It gets under your tongue. It's a direct shot into the bloodstream. It doesn't need to break down as much in your stomach because it's liquid. So, liquid's ability, especially with a strong nanoemulsion, really gives you the ability to feel it fast, which is important to people, certainly important to me as a consumer. I mean, do you use cannabis beverages?
I've tried them, but like I'm currently based in Madison, Wisconsin, so the availability is it's 2 hours south or 3 hours north right now, because we're a backward state. But I have enjoyed the quicker on ramp and then the sort of more reliable off ramp, I guess, for lack of a better term. The other thing I like is you mentioned the social aspect of it, right? When you're using or when you're enjoying edibles, it's like, because I enjoy drinking as well. And there's that social aspect of everyone's got a drink in their hands and talking or whatever. And then like when you're in that same situation and you don't have the drink in your hand, and it's just like you almost want to be like, no, don't worry, I'm fine. So there is that kind of like missing aspect of it. And I find both myself and other people like overcompensating for that, just being like, don't worry, I'm with you. We're on the same level.
Sure. Yeah. No, I hear you. I agree. People want that drink. That was actually it was interesting. That's how Mike's Hard Lemonade and the White Claws came about. Was the owner of Mike's Hard Lemonade, before he created the product, was like, you know what? People want to drink, but in this case, it was like, not everybody wants to drink beer. Like, can we create something that looks like a beer, but is sweet for people that want something sweet? And then, of course, it became, it was like, people want to drink, but they don't want the calories, right? They want the seltzers. So, yeah, but you go to the barbecue, having something in your hand just feels comfortable. We have a drinking culture. So, and again, it's all part of the reason why I saw from the beginning, eventually cannabis beverages are going to be big. We're still waiting to hit that big time, but we're on the path.
What is on that path towards hitting the big time? Is it, mocktail events? Is it parties? Is it just sheer marketing? What is it going to take in order to start, gaining more market share?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think being on the East Coast, we are seeing, like I said, more success there. That's certainly helping. I think the advent of the consumption lounge, I feel like that world is just getting started now. And man, I remember I was working with a dispensary called Barbary Coast. It's a pretty big time shop up in San Francisco. This is right before COVID. And we were going to work on this program, this campaign, where we were going to bring the good stuff in once a month for 3 straight months, and we were going to throw a party, right? And we were going to advertise a new way to consume cannabis and turn that place into a bar, but a cannabis beverage bar. And that's the opportunity, right? Obviously, COVID hit, shut down the West Hollywood and the California consumption lounges. The Vegas consumption lounges are just getting going now. So I think the consumption lounge can really be a real vehicle for giving people that experiential marketing, these experiences that you really need to get them to transform how they consume. I think that just I think the time consumption lounges that really come back to that experiential marketing.
Okay. What are some of the markets that you're looking to get into next?
So Arizona will be next. So we're kind of following the markets that we have a certain relationship in. So for on the beverage side, it's Arizona, New York, Missouri, Ohio. Not necessarily in that order. We got to see New York step up and create an environment where you could actually move some units. But from the good stuff manufacturing side, we've got those, all those that I listed, plus Washington, plus Colorado. It really depends on, we really get driven by our customers. Like we have a potential client who's interested in New Jersey. They're on the verge of changing the laws there. I reached out to a potential manufacturing partner there. So we're really driven. If you're a beverage brand and you're listening to this, if we're working together, we'll do the legwork. You tell us where it's like, hey, we want to be in Massachusetts. We want to be in Rhode Island, we want to be in New Mexico, we'll develop the relationship. So, we try to work with within our existing partner base. Most of the states I just mentioned are within one partner. We will create new relationships to serve our clients.
Okay. What do you mean by within one partner?
So, for example, Arizona, Washington, Missouri, Ohio, New York. That's one company that
Okay.
owns those manufacturing facilities. The
Okay.
more deals we can do like that that are multi-state, it just becomes makes it even easier.
With launching a new mobile co-packing operation, how do you make sure that, you don't lose sight, of your award-winning beverage brand?
Yeah, I mean that's a lot of work. Fortunately, I have a great partner. I have a great team. We've been able to develop a really good ecosystem internally. For example, the California operation now essentially runs. I'm checking in with my California team every day at 8 a.m. But they run it. They run and they go. I mean, that was a really important part for me to be able to focus on not just creating a manufacturing company, but creating one that was prepared to deliver excellent service. So I've got a really strong team. That is really the backbone for any expansion effort.
Okay. Well, Dan, I really do appreciate you taking the time today. And before we get out of here, I want to make sure, is there anything else that we might have left out or anything in particular you want to make sure the Cannabis Equipment News audience knows about either Good Stuff Manufacturing or Good Beverage?
If you're a beverage brand, and this could be in cannabis, this could be in hemp, this could even be outside of either, we're open to opportunities. We're not looking to work with every company, but we're certainly looking to find the right partnerships and we can help you expand faster and more efficiently. So feel free to reach out, Dan at goodstuffbeverageco.com, Dan at goodstuffmanufacturing.com. And on the Good Stuff Beverage side, honestly, we've got a really great path. We're really excited. I hate to say, knock on wood, we've got a path. We don't really need a lot of help right now. We're doing pretty good, but we're certainly looking for the right beverage partners to help them expand faster.
How did you come up with the name? Was it just you tried it the first time and you're like, man, that's good stuff.
You know, there's a restaurant where I live in San Diego called Urban Solace. And on Sundays, they would have bluegrass brunch.
Awesome.
And so in my world, half the year was following the Philadelphia Eagles on Sunday. I'm a Southern Jersey guy. And the other half was bluegrass brunch season. And we would go. And I remember reading the menu, and it was telling the story of the owners. And it was a husband, wife, and they were talking about how they decided to build a restaurant like they were feeding their children. And that meant organic vegetables and meat out of the system. And I'm reading this and I'm like, man, they just make stuff with the good stuff. And at the time I was building the beverage company, I was like, that's it. It's simple. We were Good Stuff Tonics at the time. So it's Good Stuff Tonics, which is now Good Stuff Beverage Company. And away we went. So that's how the name was created.
Man, I don't know the next time I'm going to be out there, but I'm going to make sure it's during bluegrass brunch season, because that sounds amazing.
Right?
All right, man. Well, thank you very much. Thank you very much for taking the time today, Dan. Again, I really do appreciate it. And, you know, I look forward to seeing what you do both as the CEO and janitor of Good Stuff.
Thank you, man. I appreciate you having me, David.
All right. Well, before we get out of here, please make sure to like, share, and subscribe to the podcast. You could also help us out a lot by leaving the podcast a positive review on whatever platform you use. If you want to email the podcast, you can reach me at david@cannabisequipmentnews.com with email the podcast in the subject line. You can also subscribe to our daily newsletter and make sure you get it delivered to your inbox first. All right, for Dan Grimm, CEO and janitor of Good Stuff Manufacturing and Good Stuff Beverage, I'm David Manti. This is the Cannabis Equipment News Podcast, and we'll see you next week. Thank you for listening to the Cannabis Equipment News Podcast.